It's time for another episode of the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast with your hosts Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, Brad Tarver, and Jason Young. Good morning, gentlemen. Happy Sunday to you guys. How are you this morning? How's life in Dallas and how's life in Jackson there, guys?
The weather in Dallas has been great this weekend. We had a ton of rain all week long, like a lot of rain. But yesterday was beautiful, so I took some time and drove all the way up to Prosper to see some friends with the top down and the S. It was a nice day.
Oh, yeah, I always forget you have a convertible. It's got to be great this time of year before it gets oppressively hot in that Dallas heat.
Yes, this is the perfect 3 days of the year to have Dallas have a convertible in Dallas. So
sunny and cool here in Jackson. It's very nice outside.
Yeah, it's been pretty nice here in Atlanta, too. It's 75 at 12:30 in the afternoon. So I think after we're done here, I'm going to go walk my dog real quick and get in a little bit of extra cardio for the day. So that'll be nice before it becomes 80, 85, something like that. So
we've had a couple of extra weeks of pollen. So it's been kind of gross, you know. I was thinking maybe we'd run out of pollen at some point. And so I got my truck washed. And then the very next day it rains. And then the day after that it's covered in pollen again. It's gross and frustrating.
Same thing here with I've got mine washed and it looked all great, and then a couple days later it was yellow again.
Yeah, out here in Atlanta we don't get snow, but we get pollen like it's snow. I mean, it just rains it down. Just, it's terrible. But as I may have mentioned in the last show, I can't remember or not, I do a subscription, my car wash as a service, where I just pay a monthly fee and I can do it unlimited time. So I'm there all the time, just driving through, wash it. And, you know, 20 minutes later, I don't care if it's going to rain that day. I don't care if it just rained. I don't care what apocalyptic condition has fallen from the sky. It's free to me. So I just go do it repeatedly. But
is that at the Mercedes place or is that a
no, no,
thing?
It's a different one. It's an independently owned car wash. It's about a couple miles from my house. And I'm there quite a bit. The only problem is when pulling in through the speed pass lane, the turn is kind of tight, and I frequently get curb rash on my stupid rims because it's a weird turn. And thank God I bought the tire protection plan, because I get those things buffed out pretty regular. It's annoying, but you know,
I do the same thing here in Dallas. I've got the monthly plan where I can get it washed. So they love my car up there. The little guys that work up there know it. So
there's less surface area to wash on yours, though. It must be a lot quicker.
Yeah, it should be cheaper. I mean, it's pretty tiny.
I opted for like the full wax and all the other stuff. It's like, just go ahead. If I'm going to do this, let me go ahead and do it right. So I feel like washing it about twice a week, especially this time of year, is about the right amount to get my money's worth. Because if I did it, I think if I did it just once, it would be $20 with all the options. So I think I do like 35 a month or something now. So if I get more than two washes a month, which I always do, then I come out ahead. So, well, let's see what's going on in Apple news. The biggest thing this week was there's a rumor that Apple will be adding USB mouse support to the iPad Pro as an accessibility feature. And I want to get your take on this first before I give my opinion. But what do you guys think about this?
I think it's a long time coming. It should have probably been there before now. I go back and forth. When I got my new iPad Pro last year and I was using it so much, just because the work I was doing was mostly in Word at that point, we were writing a lot of documentation. And I start touching my screen and I'm doing stuff. And then I get back to my laptop. I definitely found myself trying to touch the screen on the MacBook Pro, which is, you know, obviously doesn't work. So this will be kind of weird. At your suggestion, I have switched over to a Magic Trackpad over the last, I don't know, right after Christmas, I bought one. And that's all I've been using this year. So I've actually been mouse free for 4 months now. I don't know. I guess it would still be nice, you know, to be able to set my iPad up in its keyboard case. And if I could connect the trackpad in, which that may already work via Bluetooth now. I don't even know. I've never tried it. But I can't see myself hauling around a mouse to use for my iPad, though.
I think it's kind of cool. I could see using it even if it wasn't needed as an accessibility feature, just for people who may want to draw. And, you know, those kind of Photoshop folks who are good at drawing with a mouse, like our friend Ryan. I do feel like it's a long time coming, you know.
Yeah, I'm of two minds on this. On the one hand, I want it now. The more that I live on my iPad, there are definitely use cases where it would be useful. I even looked at a Surface just to, because I considered doing that at one point. Because if you do use the Adobe suite in particular, I'm thinking about things like, Premiere Pro or Audition or one of those things where you need sort of a fine pointer to be able to do things. And I suppose you probably could do it with a pencil if you're really, really kind of creative or you found some way to do it. But there are times that you definitely need that type of thing. And I don't know. I don't want to see the iPad become a Mac. I don't want to see iOS become macOS. I really don't. I kind of like iOS better than I like macOS. So I really don't want to see that. But on the other hand, I don't know. I can definitely come up with some use cases for it. Switching between apps and having to take your hands from the keyboard is very annoying. So if it had like a sort of a touchpad on the keyboard, kind of like a Mac does, then that would be acceptable to me. But I don't know. From a UI perspective, there's a lot of paradigm changes that would have to happen for that to happen. And Apple probably wants a consistent use case. So if you're using it without the keyboard and without a mouse, you would still need things to function the exact same. So it's not just as easy as slap a driver in there and let it work. I mean, how would you? It's going to change the nature of how a lot of those apps function. And I like the way that the apps function currently. I just want to be able to switch between them and have it when I need it, and then not have to depend on it if it's not there. Does that make sense?
I feel it's weird, like they're almost trying to keep up with Microsoft on the Surface Pro type line, where you know you can do both with the Surface Pro. You have a mouse that you can use, and you could also use your fingertip or a stylus, which doesn't seem to be Apple's style really to follow trends or follow the other guys, even though sometimes you do see things show up on Apple devices that may have been on another platform for a long, long time. The other thing I think is it's just going to be weird to see the little mouse cursor on the iPad screen altogether, just because it hadn't been there for so long. And I could
have. So here's the perfect use case. I just spent 3 months on a project where I was doing a lot of remote desktop into a Windows machine. If I could, I mean, you can use remote desktop on your iPad. So if I could remote into a Windows machine on my iPad and then use a mouse with that, that would be awesome.
Yeah, because trying to do remote control on a touchscreen is kludgy.
Yeah, so that's a good use case there. The other thing, Brian, you mentioned looking at a Surface. I think I do that about every 2 to 3 months. I look at one, you know, because we don't have to get into it. There's been a couple of news stories lately about the Apple keyboards and how they're still just awful and everybody hates them and it's the worst thing they've ever made. But, you know, just every couple of months I look at, like, there's like a IBM, or not IBM, a Lenovo ZenBook and a Microsoft Surface or Surface Book, Surface Laptop, all of those. And I look at them and I'm like, nope, it's still not as good as my MacBook, even with this crappy keyboard. And I move along. And it seems like I do that about every 3 months. I get frustrated enough to where I go start browsing around and looking at what other laptops are available. And I decide what I have was expensive enough and, you know, still nice enough to where I still use it. And part of that is I've been working from home so much that I have the clamshell closed and I'm sitting here in front of 2 4K monitors and, you know, external keyboard, external mouse, everything. So it really doesn't matter at that point. But when I'm, you know, having to travel a lot and work on my laptop directly, that's when it gets frustrating.
So in my use case, and this is something I tried recently. I went on I went and visited a client in Washington, and instead of taking my corporate MacBook with me, I took my iPad Pro and left the MacBook at home. And that was a big risk for me. Like, I never do that. But before I left, I had my VPN configured. I had Prompt, so if I needed SSH, I could. I had access to Slack. I had access to Outlook. I had access to the entire Word suite. And you know what? And of course, having a cellular connection, it worked great. It was wonderful. It was exactly what I needed. And when I'm thinking about situations where this wouldn't work, it's purely around when I have to go. So every year we do conferences and whatnot, and I do a lot of the YouTube videos and things like that for the company. I know that Adobe is working on Premiere Pro for the iPad, and I can't wait. But honestly, if I had something that could deal with that situation, I think when I travel, I could probably use an iPad and be happy most of the time, just for the things that I need to do. Now, having multi-window support, which is also rumored to be coming in iOS 13, that would make things a little bit better. But I think if you had a sliding scale with on the iOS on the left side and macOS on the right side, there's a comfortable medium somewhere in there where you can hit most of the use cases without having to be fully one way or the other. And I think that's what they're doing. I don't really like the Marzipan apps that are on macOS. Do you guys use news on macOS like I do?
I have. I use it a whole lot more on my iPad. That's usually where I do my news.
Me too.
Is on my iPad. The phone's a little small. The laptop's a little. Like, if I'm looking at news, I would just as soon be sitting on the couch or sitting in the bed reading the news instead of sitting here in my chair in front of my monitors. So it's more about my comfort than necessarily the app itself, I think, for me. But still,
I'll open news like if I get a notification of a new article that I may want to read from Wired or some other publication that I actually subscribe to. But I wouldn't just open the news app and browse it from my phone per se, just because it's not a great experience. Like Jim said, it's a small screen.
So Brad, your use case is exactly my use case. So
Like Jim,
I work from home quite a bit, and I'll be sitting there working. And if there's some breaking headline that comes across, I'll get the notification on the Mac and I'll click on it. And one of the things that I hate is if you click the share sheet, you can't save the article. Like a lot of times in news, I will save things for later until there's a downtime.
Definitely. God, that is annoying.
It's like, how do you not do this, Apple? Or if you right click on something, you know, all of the things that you've become accustomed to on the Mac don't work in these Marzipan apps. So maybe it'll get better, but I kind of want the Mac to remain the Mac and iOS to remain iOS. I understand why they want that cross-functionality, but again, this goes back to what I was talking about with a mouse. These apps are not designed for being interacted with in the way that they're being interacted with. So, I mean, this is a minor use case. Of course, they could add that. It shouldn't be any problem, sure. But again, it's things you have to think about. It just, I don't know, it doesn't feel natural on the Mac. I think they need a dedicated app. So, I don't know, I kind of got off on a tangent on that one, but...
One more point here. To me, this is like a equal sides of the equation here. If you're going to add mouse support to the iPad Pro, then you need to add touch support to the Mac at some point. I mean, it's like if you're going to go one way with one, you need to go the other way with the other, I think.
I don't know. I mean, I can kind of see that. If they have to do it in order, I would rather see iOS get the Mac-like features first than Mac get the iOS-like features. Like the, I don't know. I mean, personally, I know this is probably not a popular opinion, but I still believe that mobile and iOS are the future of Apple. I don't believe that macOS is. And I would rather see the iPad and iPhone take on things that my Mac can do today and get better at that and sort of leave macOS as the afterthought that it apparently seems to be within Apple. I know it's probably not a popular opinion. I know a lot of people love using their Mac. I like using my Mac, but I would love to not have to use my Mac. Does that make sense?
No, I agree. If I could do the stuff, everything I needed to do on my iPad Pro, I would do it there. I'm just saying it seems like if you're trying to make the iPad more Mac-like, a lot of other hardware makers... Most other hardware makers that are making high-end laptops now have added touchscreens, and I think it's just something that Apple needs to do to, you know, as it improves its laptops. Of course, it'd be nice if they fixed the keyboard first.
Yeah, I think they need to get the whole keyboard thing taken up, you know, fix that before they focus on touchscreens. Fix the keyboard that you have to touch rather than the screen you might not touch.
Exactly.
Well, that we've had, you know, keyboards for 50-plus years. And we just now get these new keyboards on the new MacBooks, and you get a speck of dust below a key, and it just ruins the keyboard. I mean, you got to think a little more forward than that.
This is where that Johnny Ive design aesthetic kind of hits sort of a limit of practicality. Like, yeah, it looks great, but it's not practical. You can't use that.
Yeah, I don't think Johnny Ive uses a Mac. I don't.
Yeah, I don't think he does either.
I mean,
or at least he doesn't use a MacBook if he does.
I mean, take me back to, you know, the old clicky Keytronic type keyboard, you know, that works. I mean, you could hit it with a hammer and it keeps working.
I hate clicky keyboards. I know it's a nerd thing. You're supposed to love it and, you know, revoke my nerd card, but those are the worst. Imagine being in a modern work environment where everybody's in cubicles with everybody having clicky keyboards. You might as well put them on old-timey typewriters for the da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Oh, good Lord. No, I want it to be quiet, folks. I don't want to have to need my noise-canceling headphones on while I'm trying to get things done. Ugh, what a terrible thing.
Yeah, I want to hear something that's going to make the whole audience cringe.
Sure.
I'm sitting here, you know, with, like I said, my MacBook, the clamshell is closed. I've got my external monitors. And if you'll look down, I use a Microsoft keyboard in my office.
Why?
I have a Microsoft Sculpt keyboard because I love this natural keyboard, like the layout. And I type on it amazingly. I mean, it's not noisy or anything like we were just talking about. But I use a Microsoft external Bluetooth keyboard. I know, I have one of those. And I bought this. I've had these keyboards before. I was going to be home working for a couple of months. And so I bought one. And I remapped the keys to where Command and Option and Control all work. And it's just amazing. I love this keyboard.
Bleh.
I may buy more because there's rumors that they're going to stop making them.
Good Lord. Let's see what else is going on. So WWDC is about 6 weeks out, and the rumor has it that Siri is going to become more useful with third-party apps. And it's looking like there will be several use cases where you can do media playback, search, voice calling, event ticketing, message attachments, flights, train trips, airport and gate, and seat information.
Stop me if you've heard this one before.
Why is it taking them so long to do this? I mean, we had an article last year or maybe the year before where it talked about how Siri's backend was just a hodgepodge of disjointed, terrible systems, right? And they've made a couple of big hires from Google and Amazon to work on AI. So hopefully those days are long behind us at this point. But I don't see how they can't do this. Like, I mean, we've talked about this for a while. When you have something like the HomePod, where Siri is the only way to interface with it, or the Watch, where Siri is the only practical way to interface with it, how do you not put everything in the company? You have to bet it on your digital assistant, because right now they're getting left in the dust. Though we'll talk about Amazon and Google in just a minute, but
it's a gotta have. I mean, it's something that they should have been working on right now. I mean, and I think as far behind Amazon and Google as they are, I think they're always going to be playing catch up with Siri. I don't know. It just seems like that's going to be the case.
I don't think it has to be that way. I mean, you know, the biggest problem that they've had over the years is their refusal to open it up to third party services to be able to use it, which is, if you look at what makes Alexa so popular, it's the third-party skills that get integrated with it, right? It's, I can sit here and I could play Jeopardy on mine, or I can, start Apple Music or something. You know, I don't know. Those are one cool example and one not so cool example, but you get what I'm saying, right? There's a lot of, it's the integrations from third parties. Amazon doesn't have to go out and write all that stuff. They just have to say, here's the API, here's how you interface with it, go and do. That's how a platform is popular.
We need a Siri app store. I mean, we really
totally
do.
Agree. Yes. Well, not so much an app store, so much as every app that comes in should take advantage of that and use it. You know what I mean? Have those
kind of like
in
the
there.
Watch. Yeah, like you have an app and it can do stuff on the watch. I mean, it has a watch app that goes with it. Whereas if you have an app like Fantastical, it's got certain things where it hooks into Siri.
But it does it in a roundabout way. I mean, it's gotten better, but used to, you would add things to your reminders or your calendar, and then it would read your reminders and calendar. You couldn't interact with Fantastical directly through Siri in those days. I don't know if that's still the case, but you would say, add this to my calendar, and then automatically Fantastical, because it could have access to your calendar, would go ahead and pull it in. I want all of that gone. I want it to be, I want to talk to my device. Yes, I want that Iron Man-like digital assistant where you can sit there and jabber to it and just have it do things. I mean, good God, Siri's been around for 8 years come October, 8 years, and it still doesn't feel all that much more useful than when it launched, especially considering what a lead they had on Google and Amazon at the time and how they're still so far behind. Though I must say I do use it a lot.
My frustration is that they tease something and then don't deliver.
Yes.
And hopefully this isn't just another tease.
Shortcuts are pretty amazing, but 98-99% of the population are never going to set up a single shortcut. I mean, it's just not something most people are going to do. So, I mean, they've got to make it more user-friendly to do the advanced things with Siri.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And also, just by virtue of the fact that we hear that Shortcuts is also coming to the Mac, so that's going to be like Automator going forward. And that's nice. Though they still have some frustrating things that aren't even in Shortcuts. There are times that I would love to be able to toggle individual notifications for an app, like, oh, I'm going over here, turn off notifications for, X application. I can't do that through Shortcuts. Like, or even do that through Siri. I don't think you can. I mean, how does that even work? Things that you should be able to do, you can't. And I don't understand it, but
it should just work.
So speaking of digital assistants, now we've had the bad, let's even have the even worse. So Amazon admits that employees review a small sample of Alexa audio. I say small sample in double quotes, in air quotes, lasers. So employees in Boston, Costa Rica, India, and Romania can do this, and they interpret up to 1,000 audio clips an hour. Now, Amazon has told Bloomberg they have strict privacy safeguards in place so that it's all treated as the confidential data that it is. But apparently, there's an internal chat, and employees, of course, as you would expect, will share audio to other people in the chat because it's amusing. So, wow.
A small sample of a billion is a million, Brian. I mean, when you say small sample, I guess you need to give the scale to begin with to determine what that sample size is.
So, Jim, you have about five Alexas. What do you think about this?
I think we have three. So we have the one with the screen in the bedroom, and then the real Echo thing downstairs, and then there's a Dot somewhere. Maybe the bathroom. Yeah.
You have one in the bathroom?
Yeah, there's a Dot in there. I think it's mostly
what?
There's like a. It's not in the water closet. It's in the place in the area with the sink. Like there's a door there.
So is that so you can do that fast reorder of toilet paper in a pinch? I mean that.
It's
I don't mean to make a big thing about this.
It's
but
like
this,
to
that's,
listen
that's
to like
weird
up
to
first,
me.
Like up first. You know, while you're in there brushing your teeth and getting ready in the morning, that kind of thing.
So we know what audio clips in. That Amazon's going to be hearing on you is what I'm is what yeah. I'm hearing. So
yeah, exactly. No, I don't know. Are they listening to audio clips of you asking her to do stuff, or are they listening to audio clips that it just picks up at all times
when you have set a trigger word?
Presumably, they're only listening to things when you ask it. However, as the article that we're going to put in the show notes links, it says employees occasionally hear unexpected or extreme audio. Bloomberg reports in one instance, two workers heard what sounded like a possible sexual assault, but were told that it wouldn't be appropriate to intervene.
So her name was Alexa in this case, right? And he's hollering her name, and that's what happened.
Well, see, that also opens up all sorts of ethical and legal concerns of now, are you culpable when you hear something? You know, what if somebody, well, I don't know. It just, this is an area that's not good. I mean, I realize that they do this, and apparently Google and Apple do the same thing. When I first heard this, I'm like, thank God I use Apple, because Apple doesn't do that. But apparently Apple, it says user voice recordings are saved for a 6-month period so that the recognition system can utilize them better to understand the user's voice. However,
I mean, they have to learn somehow. I actually use my HomePod as much as I use the Echo devices now in the house, because the HomePod is in my office. And so as far as, you know, my weather and my podcast and my music and the things that I ask about, I probably talk to the HomePod as much as I do the Echo devices now, just because of where it's at. I don't have an Echo device in my office because I bought that HomePod and I use it in here. So I think the one in our bedroom, it literally, I'd say 9 out of 10 requests for it are play rain sounds, which is, you know, when we're going to bed. So, I mean, that's about what it does. That's the one, whatever they call them, talent or tricks or whatever it is they're called, you know, that one gets used over and over again, and turning lights on and off. That's about it.
Yeah, I would say the HomePod for me, I have my single Echo Dot muted all the time, so it can't hear me. The microphone is off. The same with my Google Assistant. It's turned off. The only thing it listens is the HomePod. So, you know, and most of the stuff I tell it, like if I need the date to write the date for something, half the time I'll just yell out, "What's the date?" or something like that. And, you know, the HomeKit functions are probably the biggest use for me, and occasionally music and other stuff. But so in the same article, or right after the same article, where it says that, oh, this is tightly controlled, it also says that employees who listen to Amazon Alexa requests have access to customers' home addresses. So the team members who have access to Alexa users' geographic coordinates can type them into a third-party mapping software and find residences, said employees who signed non-disclosure agreements barring them from speaking publicly about the program. So that's horrific.
Why would they need an address? What's the purpose there?
So you could do something creepy, or if you heard something creepy, imagine the culture that we live in now, the snitching, tattletale culture that we live in. So imagine you're just having a conversation with someone and you say something that maybe you wouldn't want the whole world to hear. And let's say there's some do-gooder at Amazon who hears that. They could go and publicly shame you by saying, I mean, that would be a big thing for them because they would reveal how they know that information. But
like if you said something racist, or if you were like, I want to defraud the government, they could go in and, you know, blow a whistle.
Yes. So
you're trying to get your kids into college, anything like that.
Yeah. You know, if you're just going to spend $500,000 to get them into a school that you shouldn't have to spend them $500,000 to get them into.
Why don't we put Johnny on the crew team?
I don't know. It's a scary,
what's their address?
It's a scary world that we live in that this is the case, but everything is listening now. That's the weirdest part of this, is that even if you don't have an Echo Dot, even if you don't have a Google Home Assistant or a HomePod, well, guess what? Your phone's listening. I have these Amazon cameras that I use, and even though I turned off my Echo Dot's microphone, well, guess what? I have Amazon's other things that are sitting here watching and listening, so how do I know that they're not turned on and listening? I don't think they respond to the control word. I've never tried that. I don't think that works, but
scary as it may be, everything's listening now, but you give it 10 years and everything's going to be watching and listening. I mean, in Europe, it's already pretty crazy. If you go to Europe, there, you see cameras every now and then here in the States, but if you go to Europe, when I say Europe, I basically mean London, because that's the only place I've been to recently. There are cameras everywhere. I mean, everywhere, like just multiples on every single building you come across. So they're watching, you know, and with the compute power that we're starting to get, you know, they're going to start being able to analyze this stuff. And I think they're already doing a lot of that in China, whether they want to admit to it or not, you know, that they've got full facial recognition for, you know, a billion people. We're getting there. So, I mean, it's all coming. And I think instead of trying to stop it, we need to figure out how to regulate it. And I think that's what's come up, at least with the Facebook stuff here recently, is all these things they've been doing. Technically, they're not illegal in the United States because there are no real laws around data or things like that in the U.S. like they put into place in Europe.
So setting aside for a fact that, you know, it's Europe and not the U.S., the thing to consider there is that at least those are in public places. So if you're out in public, even now, if I'm out in public, I just assume I'm being recorded somewhere on some device simply because of where the, you know, security cameras are ubiquitous. The scary part is your domicile, your home, your castle, your place where, you know, you can be yourself and not have to worry about, you know, broadcasting yourself to the world unintentionally. And that's
my bathroom.
Or being recorded yes. without your control.
Yes, being recorded without your express control. And that's the scary part of this, is that it's become so commonplace. I mean, I feel that you're right. I feel that video will be in there soon. And it's like, I have a number of cameras in my house right now that, you know, I have watching entrances and exits and things like that. And occasionally, you know, if you're changing clothes or doing something and you know you're in the field of it, it's like, well, I know it's off, but do I really know it's off? I mean, it's...
Without the express written consent of the National Football League.
Those are always the best on every sporting event. But yeah, it's, I don't know, it's kind of scary. This is ripe for abuse, and we are going to see this abused over the next few years. I'm certain of it, right? This is employees that are leaking this stuff to the press. They need to keep putting bad publicity on these companies until something happens where there's a way to not be impacted by this quite so much. Speaking of digital assistants, so last year we talked about Google Duplex, and we saw the demo at Google's keynote for their developer conference, where you know it made a reservation at a restaurant and it imitated a human voice. It even put in ums and uhs and vocal ticks. Well, now that is available on iPhones, and it's part of the. I thought it was going to be a separate app, but no, it's built into the Google Assistant, so you can just ask the Google Assistant. So, are you guys going to try this? I've been inclined to, but I haven't myself. I don't know. There's something creepy about it. But what about you guys? Would you actually try it now that's available on iPhones?
I think I may try to have it call you and try to sell you something, Brian.
So, is the audio for it available after the fact, so I could go back and listen to it myself and have a good chuckle, or what?
That is a great question. I would want to. One of us needs to try that and report back on a future episode and just see how it goes. Even if you make a reservation and then call and cancel it right after or whatever, just to do it and see how it functions and if you're able to hear it. Because I'm kind of intrigued, but I don't know. I don't know if I have a real reason to try.
Maybe you call the restaurant back and like, hey, my brother just called you and he did it for the wrong day.
I've been having trouble making a doctor's appointment. Like, I get the voicemail service every time. I'm gonna just have like the assistant start calling every 15 minutes and leaving voicemails.
That would be awesome. Make it be annoying instead. That's a good use case for it. I hate talking to people on the phone, so that would actually be very helpful. I mean, I do it for a living, but I wouldn't want to as part of my. I do it enough in my professional life. I don't want to
do it
in my
personal life. Little short conversation. So you do like, you know, conference calls where you're, you know, long drawn out talks. Yeah, it's those little meaningless snippets of talks that are really just annoying.
That are the worst. So let's see what else is going on. Speaking of phones, Tim Cook wants you to put down your iPhone. He said that the company had not intended for people to be constantly using his iPhones and noted that he himself has silenced his push notifications in recent months. So why haven't they done something with notifications to make them less annoying? I mean, would you or would you not want something where you could define when you get notifications? Like, I would love to say, send me text messages or maybe Slack messages immediately, but only give me email notifications or whatever other notifications once a day or once an hour or whatever. Thoughts?
Well, I've got this issue that we talked about a little bit before the podcast where my iMessages are all messed up now, where I can get a message 2 hours ago and I'll see it on my Mac. And then when I unlock my phone, I get the banner for it, which makes no damn sense. I have cut way back on my notifications. I have a lot of them on the receive silently, where if I want to see them, they're in notification center, and I rarely look at them there, but at least they're there. I've turned off a lot of the little, you know, numbers. What are those called? The you know, to tell you how many messages you have or whatever. I've turned off a lot of those because I'm OCD enough to where I don't like the badges all over the place. Like it, you know, and so I've turned off a lot of those. I mean, I have started doing that, but there's enough apps on my phone now that I get messages from or notifications from that I still get a lot, even though I've turned off, you know, 3/4 of the apps that do it or even more.
Brian has his sort of example use case that he was talking about where he would like to get some messages on a regular basis and others sort of digested, you know, in a periodic daily form of some sort. I have gone through at times where I just need a break from my phone, and I don't necessarily put it down so that, you know, if I want to pick it up and look at it, I can, but I will put it into do not disturb and I will turn off notifications 100%. So it never buzzes. It's only accessible when I want to look at it. It's not sitting there bugging the crap out of me. And I'll go through that probably for about a month. And I still don't feel like I miss anything because I don't compulsively look at my phone, but, you know, periodically I'll be at my desk and I'll look down and be like, oh, I wonder if I've got anything on my phone. And I'll look at it, and that may be 2 hours may go by before I look at my phone again. But you feel less fragmented in your brain from being constantly tapped on your shoulder.
So I've got a good example here. So yesterday we went to visit some friends, and this is a friend of mine. She's a VP for a fairly large company here in Dallas. And she was talking about running or doing some exercise and keeping track of it all. And I'm like, well, you need to get an Apple Watch. You know, that's the perfect use case for an Apple Watch. And she said, I had an Apple Watch. It was either like a Series 1 or Series 2. And it died. And, you know, my husband said, you know, go get it fixed. And I started wearing a regular watch for a couple of weeks before I ever was going to get it fixed. And I realized I enjoyed not being tethered to every damn message that was coming in and not have, you know, a reason to look down at, you know, every time my kids sent a text message or every time I got a text message from work. And so she never got the watch fixed, and she's just wearing regular watches again because she said she just, you know, it's basically she can put her phone down now and walk away and, you know, she just doesn't get the messages.
Okay, so I have some problems with this. A little bit. For most of us, and I realize that women are a bit different because I did not realize until the last couple of years how frequently that women's outfits don't have pockets like men's do. But most of us have our phone. Most of us guys, I'll say, have our phones in our pockets, I would say. But probably a fair thing, unless you're still one of those people that have your phone on a clip on your belt, in which case, for God's sake, put it in your pocket.
If you have it on a clip on your belt, you're probably 55 years or older.
Probably yeah. Have on a pair of big white Reeboks or black. Hey, solid.
Now. Hey now. Air Monarchs. For the win. No, I do know a guy who's 50 who does still have his smartphone on his belt, and it irks me to no end. But anyway, most people have your phone in your pocket. So you're either like me and you have it on vibrate permanently, or you're going to hear those notifications. So having a normal watch is not going to help you any. You still have the notification problem. Now, if you're female and, you know, you have a phone in a purse or, you know, what have you, maybe you have it down and you're not being distracted by it. I can see that. But again, it's still the fundamental issue, right? You could fix that problem by fixing your notifications. You don't just have to, now I'm free. No, you're really not. You still have the notifications. They're still there. If you ever have your phone on you, which is most people. I mean, in her particular use case, I'm not disagreeing with her, but I'm just saying that's not solving the problem. The problem is still there. It's how you get them. They really need some granular notifications. I, as someone who wears his watch near constantly, sometimes I sleep in it. Like last night I slept in it. I want notifications that don't appear on my phone, but they do appear on my watch. Or they don't make any noise on my phone, but they make noise on my watch.
To have that for sure.
Especially since I have cellular service on my watch. So it's not like there's no excuse for me not having access to these notifications at some point, with or without the phone around. You know, this morning it was kind of weird. I was at my gym working out with my trainer. And when I work out with my trainer, I just lock my phone in the car. But I have my watch on me, and I'm more than 20 feet away. So for most if I get a text message, great. You know, if I get some Apple push notifications, wonderful. I got a push notification on Telegram and I tap the thing to open it, and I can't because I'm out of Bluetooth range. I know that's not exactly a notifications problem, but yeah, okay, that really falls into they need to build their own app again and have that on the watch itself. I don't know. I'm going all over the place today. But I do want notifications that are independent on the watch than they are the phone. Because nothing's worse than getting a notification and, you know, you want to go acknowledge it or whatever, but then it's still on the phone. Or, I don't know, the inconsistent state of notifications, as Jim alluded to, is a real big problem.
I think you need to get an Android. I think that's what I think they have infinitely configurable things. At least that's what it says on the commercials.
I don't know. As you say, with shortcuts, most people don't go and do.
No, that's really the problem. I mean, we are configuring notifications and we want even more options. Most people don't touch them at all. So that's why they get just literally a shit ton of notifications because they install an app and it says, can I send them to you? They click yes on the first time they run the app, and then they never go in and turn anything off. So I can imagine those sorts of people do get just notifications out the wazoo.
Yeah, there is a very small contingent of people for whom the customization makes any sense. I was a guy who ran Linux on the desktop for many, many years, so I know all about going in and making things infinitely customizable, and your desktop couldn't be used by another person on the face of the planet by the time you're done because you make all these tweaks and changes. But again, I think it's like that sliding scale between, you know, dumbed down to stupidity and super genius level. On a scale of dumb phone to Linux desktop, there's some level in there where you can get the right level of the sweet spot of customization and sensible defaults, and then you're all golden.
I don't think this is a spoiler, but when is it Tony Stark pulls out the flip phone in Endgame? That was pretty good.
Flip phone.
Didn't he pull out a flip phone? I thought it was somebody.
That was
out a,
that was in
phone.
An Infinity War. They had the
flip phone. Infinity War. Okay, that was sorry.
Damn, Jim, you got to.
I've watched both
right.
of them
like
recently.
Ago.
I watched it Friday night just so I'd be ready for the other one. And so yeah, so that's what it was. Yeah.
What's funny is, of course, in Infinity War, Captain America had an Atlanta number, which I thought was hilarious with his 678 area code. That was great. They make every one of those movies here in Atlanta. Why don't they just set one in Atlanta? Why do we have to pretend it's New York? Come on. We could have Doctor Strange move a little
because
5 points.
Nobody
it's
cares
fine.
If Atlanta gets destroyed. Everybody like gets all heartbroken if New York is destroyed.
Thanks a lot. Let's see. Jim, you put a few things in the show notes. Would you like to discuss those?
Yes. The first one is this new podcast app or service/app that is out there called Luminary. I wanted to talk about that a little bit. John Gruber had a really good post about it this past week. And I thought the title of the post was great. It's all podcast or shows, but not all shows are podcast. And so it basically the premise here is that podcasts have been around a long time. And to me and to him and to anybody else who knows what a podcast is, it's a serial episodic series available via like RSS, which I mean, I think it's Apple. I think Apple's podcast app actually created the format that the RSS comes in now. And Brian, you can correct me if I'm wrong. I think that's RSS existed
well,
before
RSS
that,
has been around
that,
for a long, long time. But
right. But
as
they,
with most things that are subscription on the internet or syndicated via open protocols, RSS would be the way to go. Sorry. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. And so they, Apple Podcasts, started using RSS, to get these feeds for the podcast. And now Luminary is this, it's a podcast listener and a podcast service in one. They've raised $100 million, something crazy. It's a subscription service and it's kind of bucking a lot of trends, making a lot of the bigger podcasters unhappy about how they're handling things. Significant number of large, popular podcasts have pulled out of the service. And I think this is going to be a critical moment in podcasting here to see how the whole thing with Luminary plays out. If they make it, then I think podcasting has been a little guy's thing all along. I mean, there are some big players in the game, but as it is now, anybody can make a podcast. You can get it put on Apple, the podcast app, and it's there for somebody to find it. If we start these walled gardens like Luminary is trying to do, then this becomes an issue. And I mean, we've talked about it a little bit in the past with Spotify. I was complaining about one or two of the podcasts I used to listen to going to be Spotify exclusive podcasts where you had to open up Spotify to Spodcast, yeah, to play them. We need to like trademark that there, Spodcast. And it's just, I don't know, it's such a great medium, and I just feel like these people are effing it up, and I just, you know, I thought it was something worth talking about.
Yeah, and to put a little more color around the way that Gruber put it, something you need to remember, what's kind of scummy about what Luminary is doing and Spotify as well, is that they will take the free content. So you take a podcast like ours, we can put that on Spotify. We're on Spotify. People listen to us on Spotify. But they will put their own proprietary stuff in there as well. So they will take free content and redistribute it, but they will also stick their proprietary content in there, and you can't get to it except through their player. I think one of the things that Gruber made a good point about was to compare it to websites. So picture a website that only worked in one browser. And of course, those of us who have been on the internet for a long time remember how things like Internet Explorer was one of those situations where you had the browser wars where things were optimized for Internet Explorer and broke them in other browsers. So we kind of almost saw that if you're old enough to remember that. But that's the thing that's kind of crummy. Now, if Spotify didn't take podcasts from other places, if you could only put their shows into it, that's one thing. If Luminary did that, that would be one thing. And you can opt out of these things as well, but the point is that they're not doing what a podcast should do. A podcast is something that you have an RSS feed that's presented for. You can listen to it in any number of players. It's an open standard that people are consuming, even if it is just an amalgam of other open standards, like present your podcast as an AAC or an MP3 or a WAV file or whatever, and find a way so that people can listen to it episodically, automatically through a feed reader of some sort. And I don't disagree with the premise of what he's saying. You know, they're not the first ones to have done this. I think, of course, Spotify did it first, but you had companies like Stitcher that's been out there forever that did something also weird where they would take in podcasts, they would compress them down, the audio quality was terrible, and then they would insert their own ads into your podcast, and then they would make money off of it. So I remember the Nerdist and a few others were like, you know, you can't use our podcast, we're not giving you permission, they would have to pull them. So we're seeing this, but this balkanization of something that's an open thing is really kind of distressing. And what's really bad about it, like if you wanted to take some of these proprietary podcasts and put money around them, you can do that now. You can do, I know a number of podcasts that do commercial episodes where you can go and present a private feed that's individual for the user. Now, granted, I could share my private feed with you and you can't really do anything about it, but that doesn't normally happen. If you're giving someone money, if you're paying into someone's Patreon or whatever, and you're getting these private episodes through a private RSS feed, you're probably not going to share that out. I could share my Spotify credentials with someone if I really wanted to. I mean, there's nothing stopping you from doing any of those things. It's just, it's really terrible that they are trying to lock all this content up behind paywalls. And their whole thing of, well, you know, podcasts shouldn't have ads in them. Ours doesn't. But again, we are the little guy. I don't think we're going anywhere. I just don't want to see things like Luminary and Spotify become ubiquitous. Apple, Apple has always had a bad reputation among non-Apple people of everything they do for money. Everything is overpriced, blah, blah, blah. We've heard all this crap for years. But think about when podcasts really took off around 2005. Apple was the one that gets credit for that. When you hear people talk about podcasts now, what is it the one thing you will always hear people say? Actually, there's two things. One, they'll say, go find us on iTunes. I hear that for every podcast. The other thing is, go leave us a review in iTunes, which is the other thing that they want people to do.
I mean, the name came from the damn iPod. I mean, the name came from
iPod. Exactly.
You listened to it on the iPod. It was a podcast. I mean,
thanks,
that's
Adam
where
Curry.
The name came from.
Didn't he try to trademark podcast or something or other because he'd been doing it for a while?
I don't remember. I do remember there being something when they first started, they weren't called podcasts, and there was something had to do with the name Lemon or the word lemon or something in it. But I don't remember what it was.
But anyway, for all the crap that Apple gets, they are the reason that we have the popular format of distributing things via RSS. Like, they were the ones that really, as a major company, put that out there for their player, and it really took off. And it's weird that the company that gets all the crap for being proprietary, expensive, et cetera, is not the one that's actually causing the balkanization and problem of this. So, I don't know. Maybe that's not a big deal, but it's kind of ironic, I think.
And to bring this back to what we were talking about earlier, we didn't discuss this, but supposedly in the next version of macOS, we're going to get Marzipan apps for podcast and music and movies that are separate instead of, like, we'll still have iTunes, but we're going to have Marzipan version of the apps broken out as well, supposedly.
That would be fantastic if it works the way that it's supposed to. I would love to not have to use that. And again, having a consistent user experience, we've talked about this countless times. I like having the same, you know, email program on my Mac that I have on my iPad, which is Spark in this case, or, you know, just use any example here. I want an application that's ubiquitous across all devices and platforms. I don't want to have, well, I use this on the Mac and I use this on the iPhone. I use this on the iPad. So get cracking, Marco, and port Overcast via Marzipan into Mac OS. That would be good.
And so that's the next little thing that I added into the show notes. It was just a little blurb that came out from Marco yesterday. He's added the ability in Overcast for you to share snippets of podcasts. So if you hear something in a podcast, instead of just sending them the whole hour, 2 hour long podcast and say, hey, listen to this, you can actually record snippets of podcast and send them to people to listen to via the app, which I thought was pretty neat. And being typical Marco, he even added the ability for you to take out the shared via Overcast, like, you know, little tagline on there to where, if, you know, you don't have to advertise for him if you don't want to. But I thought that was a neat feature that I hadn't seen in any other podcast, because I know I have shared, one of the options that did exist in Overcast was share at this point. So you could basically send somebody a link to a podcast and have it start playing at the, you know, 45 minute mark or whatever, you know, that you wanted them to hear. But this actually allows you to, you know, to record, you know, to mark certain portions of a podcast for somebody to listen to, which...
You're muted again. You are muted again. That's a great keyboard you have, by the way.
Yeah, I think
I was about to say the same thing.
The shift must, like, eventually it's like, I'm not going to hold down shift for you anymore. I don't know. When I can't go on my long soliloquies now.
Doesn't happen on my Apple keyboard, I'm just saying.
I think that's a feature, probably, not a bug. It's just to keep me from talking way too much here. So anyway, it's a neat feature of Overcast that I saw via my RSS reader this morning that Marco had posted it. I mean, to bring all of this full circle. Yeah, so there's that. So if you're not an Overcast user, and I think, Brian, you've finally come over to the dark side and you're using Overcast now. You weren't for a while.
I figured after buying ads your dollar a month for so long that it probably made sense to actually use it. That and Pocket Casts really sucks. Like I used Pocket Casts for a long time. I mean, it was good for a while. Last summer, of all places, I was driving a lot between, you know, my house and my parents' house, which are hours and hours away. So I listened to a lot of podcasts, of course, obviously, and I couldn't put together custom lists. And I'm like, what the hell is this? How can you not? That's been a feature that's been in every podcast player since like forever. And they had a thing, an up next queue, which is a list. It's like, no, sometimes I want to make a list for this and a list for that. I don't want to have everything in one big queue. The Android version of Pocket Cast, which I was playing with Android because we didn't have Waze at the time in iOS for CarPlay, it could do it, but the iOS version could not. So I finally just had to ditch it and move back to Overcast. And honestly, you know what? Overcast has worked great. I should have, you know, it's fine. So it stays out of my way. It does what I need it to do. And it's fine. It's fine. Everything's fine. But yeah, I came back to the Overcast side. And again, after buying ads, kind of felt weird not to do it. Let's see. What else? Is there anything else? I know you had, we can just look at, so there's a report that's saying that AirPods with noise canceling will launch later this year. I would be very surprised if that actually happened. Would you guys do noise canceling AirPods, or would you stick with your MX3s?
I would stick with my Sonys. I mean, for me, the AirPods on an airplane are practically useless just to listen to music now, because they don't seal and the plane is so loud that, I mean, I see people with them in their ears on the airplane. I'm like, what, are you just using them as earplugs? Because even if you turn it way up, I mean, it's not great. So, I mean, I like my, you know, my big closed can Sonys on the airplane. I can't see myself wanting noise canceling. And plus, if I'm walking around, like if I'm walking around downtown or something with AirPods in, I don't want noise canceling on, or, you know, I'm liable to get hit by a damn car, right? So
I can't imagine there being a very good battery life on them if they're constantly emitting white noise, you know, to cancel out outside sounds. And I'm sure there's a workaround for that Apple will dream up, but at the same time, it just doesn't seem like it's possible. Like, you'd have to have this sort of lump on the outside of your ear just for extra battery for it to, you know, be basically playing all the time.
Yeah, that's the other part of this is that the battery life would be terrible, so I don't know how they're going to do that, though. I've got to say, with the new AirPods, I don't know, maybe it's just because they're new, or maybe it's because it's Bluetooth 5.0, my battery lasts a long, long time. Normally, I use my Plantronics headset when I'm on calls, and most of my calls will go at least an hour when I have one. These last the entire time. I don't have any trouble, and I can go very infrequently without having to charge them throughout the course of a normal day. Jim, have you been using them, or have you just...
Yeah, I've been using mine for all my calls, and they work great. I mean, and it's so convenient to just sit them down on my little Mophie charge pad here, you know, between calls, and it buffs them right back up, and yeah, I mean, it's nice. I've really enjoyed. I mean, the other ones, I forgot I really loved my AirPods, and I got more and more frustrated with them as they got older. And now that I got my AirPods back, man, it's nice.
I use my first generation for when I'm working out. So if, you know, I short them out with all my copious amounts of sweat, then it won't be any big deal because I've gotten my money's worth out of them. And I use the new ones for, you know, oftentimes if I'm just around the house, like if I'm around the house not doing anything, I'll have my AirPods in. The new ones, whether or not I'm listening to anything, whether or not I'm doing anything, it's, you know, they're just sort of like permanent fixtures right now.
Little hat tip. If you don't want your wife to talk to you when you're walking around the house, just put them in your ears. You don't even have to be playing anything. You just put them in your ears and you walk around and people just assume that you're listening to something and they don't talk to you. It's pretty neat.
That may work at work. It does not work at home. Then I get yelled at for not. Why are you not listening to me? Take those things out. What are you doing? I need to talk to you. All right, fine.
I can confirm it does not work at home.
No, it does not work. It doesn't have a wife canceling annoyance feature of like it doesn't keep her from getting annoyed at you for ignoring her. But one of the things that I use more than I thought that I would is the fact that they're always listening for Siri now, which, you know, for so long with the air. I mean, I had them day one, the day the first ones came out. It just became old hat to reach up and double tap and say something or press the button on my phone or press the button on my watch or whatever. But now having them always listening is super handy. So here's a use case. Very early in the morning or sometimes at lunchtime, I will walk my dog around the neighborhood. And as I exit the house, as I go through the garage, I can just, you know, say the words. I can invoke Siri and say, close the garage door. And it just does it. Or, you know, go to the next track or, you know, turn down the volume by this much. You know, whatever the functionality that I'm doing. And the fact that it's always listening and always doing what it needs to do like that is just, it's neater than I realized.
It's like you're an X-Man. It's like you're an X-Man and you can just make stuff move just with the words of your mouth.
Pretty much the power of my mind is compelling these things to do what it needs to do. So it's, you know, and again, and it took me a while to not, because I would reach up and I would double tap them and nothing would happen. And I would double tap them again. It's like, oh, wait a minute. No, you don't do that anymore. You just talk to Siri normal and it'll do what it needs to do. So that is an unexpected useful feature for me that I wasn't thinking about when I got it. But now, particularly, you know, when you're dog walking, it's wonderful to just not have to pull out your phone, just tell it to do what to do, and it does it without even having to touch a button. Well, I think that is about all that I have this week. Jim, Brad, what do you got?
I have just one more thing for this week. We'll put the link in the show notes. I was browsing in Apple News last week, and I came across one of those stupid articles that are like, 25 things from Shark Tank that you need. You know, those stupid things from like Thrillist or
BuzzFeed.
Yeah.
Taboola.
And so I click on it and I'm reading through. I bought this little thing. It's called the Read Rest, or it's Read Rest. We'll put the link in the show notes. It's a little strong magnetic clip that you can put on your shirt to hold your glasses. So it makes this little bitty like hook on your shirt to hold your reading glasses. It's the nerdiest thing you've ever seen, and I love it. I got it last Friday, and I stuck one on my shirt for the weekend going to Mississippi, and just always having my reading glasses right there no matter where I am. They're just, because if you put them, if I wear a polo and I stick them down in like the hole in the polo, they tend to fall out from there. Whereas this thing, the way it works, it kind of keeps them in. You order a 2-pack from Amazon. It was like $20. One's stainless silver. The other one is black, depending on what color shirt you're wearing. It's the nerdiest thing you've ever seen, and I cannot see how I ever lived without it now. It's gonna change my life almost as much as AirPods have.
And you guys goofed on me for wearing Air Monarchs. Good Lord, Jim. All right, do you have this around? I mean, I know we're an audio only thing, but I have to see this, Jim. Can you demonstrate on your shirt? You need to put a link in the show notes so we can show the people at home what the hell you're talking about. But yes, show me how this works.
It's just a new spin on the old lady, you know, chain that goes around your neck and holds your glasses.
Wow. Okay, that is like a belt clip for your glasses, but on your chest. Jim, you're muted. You're making a lot
of work. But on your chest. How often? Yeah. How awesome is that? I mean, I don't know. I saw it. I was just like, yeah, that could be cool. I stuck it on there and stuck my glasses on there, and I'm like, I am never going back.
Wow. Though, to be fair, these are like Air Monarchs, but for your chest.
No. Most people, you can't even see what it is. It just looks like my glasses are stuck to the chest. Like my mom was like, what? How does that work? And I'm like, oh, let me show you.
We've pretty much cemented that magnets, anyone who's how do they the work? Magnets, how do they work? We've just cemented the fact that anyone who's under 40 listening to this just turned the show off. This is great, but I'll put it in there anyway. Finally, as part of our pop culture moment, of course, Avengers Endgame came out this weekend. Did you guys get a chance to see it yet?
Yes.
I haven't. It's been sold out where I like to go see movies at the Cinemark here in town. But there's been a couple of shows where it was just, you know, there'd be one seat on the front row, and I don't like just looking straight up to watch a movie. So we are going to Portland, Oregon next week for a few days for a conference, and we were going to see it at the IMAX there at an IMAX theater there in Portland. So I'm pretty excited about that. I think that's Wednesday that we'll see it.
So bad. I just, like, now that I've seen it, I want to do like a drive-by on the theater and do like a Snape kills Dumbledore moment, you know?
So just sort of bad. Yell out spoilers. Oh yeah, yeah. It would be funny. So yeah, I know the day about a month ago when they put the tickets on sale, we were all on Telegram sort of chatting, and the moment they put tickets on sale, my wife and I do the AMC A-list thing, and I thought, okay, I'm going to go in, I'm going to get tickets before anyone else, it'll be fine. AMC's servers melted down near immediately. They were offline for nearly 6 hours. And if you went through Fandango, it broke all the records that Fandango had. Like, I mean, it's saying that a friend of mine just texted me saying it's going to hit 1.2 billion this weekend. This weekend. And it's only been
1.2.
Like 2.
Wow. They were just saying 1 billion was going to be like the target.
No, it's blown past all. It blew past The Force Awakens. The Force Awakens in 2015 had like 117 million or something as its opening weekend, and they blew past it by an additional 38 million. So it's been doing great. But when it came out, AMC servers melted down, so nobody could get tickets that was online. If you went into Fandango, it did something I'd never seen before, where it put you in a virtual queue in the browser, and you would just sit there and wait. So we were able to get show at 10 p.m. on opening night in the Dolby Theater, which was nice. But I know, Jim, you had said, what's the big deal? So then I kind of trolled Jim by putting in like links of, you know, 17 AMC theaters to stay open 72 hours straight to show this. Like, I was showing that people out here, there were 2 and 3 a.m. shows for a 3-hour movie. And I would go click just to see how many tickets had been sold. They were almost all sold out at 2 and 3 in the morning. I mean, this is nuts.
We sat down for dinner Friday night at Hop Dottie's. Bride, you know what that is here in Dallas, a burger place. And so they have like shared tables, like 4 tops that are kind of connected. And so we were sitting there eating, and 3 people sat down next to us. And one of the guys had a comic book shirt on. I don't know if it was Avengers, but it was a comic book shirt. And this was Friday night, the day before I was seeing it. And jokingly, I was like, hey, no spoilers. You can't talk about it, because we're right across the street from the movie theater that we were going to. So I'm like, if they just got out, I'm like, hey, no spoilers. We haven't seen it yet. And the guy just started laughing. He's like, no, we're eating dinner and then we're going to see it next. So
I got to tell you, all my fellow sweaty fat nerds were out in attendance at all my showings. I went to the 8 a.m. on Saturday as well. So I've seen it twice already. And yeah, it was just... It was my peeps. That's all I'm saying. We're all in our comic book shirts. We all could stand to lose a few.
I jokingly told Megan yesterday that I needed to find my a nerdy shirt to wear, and I really couldn't find anything good. So I was like, I just put on a polo and I'd be that guy. So
I actually put on the Avengers soundtrack while I was picking out shirts. It was very heroic. I had tons to choose from, so it was good. I made my wife wear a Rocket Raccoon shirt. I wore my Captain America and Iron Man shirt. And then Saturday morning when I saw it, I wore my Hulk and Wolverine shirt. So I was full-on nerding out. I enjoyed it. It was good. I even pre-ordered it already through Vudu, I think, so I could get the 4K version when it finally drops, probably at the end of July. So, yeah.
It was a bit long, but I really enjoyed it.
It was long. And if you guys ever see the... I don't know if you watch the movie pitches, I guess. I think it's Screen Rant that does them, where it's the guy and he plays both the screenwriter and the studio exec. And it's like, I hear you got a movie for me. And he'll go through a script of a movie and pointing out all the stuff that's ridiculous. They did one for Endgame that came out like the day after the movie came out. I'll put the link in the show notes. Fantastic. Points out little problems and little holes and things that are kind of humorous, but they do them for every movie. And I'll sit there and watch those things all day long. Not honest trailers. Those are good too. But this is a guy that's doing like a movie pitch of here's the movie I've written for you. And they talk it out and just point out all the goofy stuff. So, well, I think that's all I have for this week. We missed Jason this week, but I'm sure he'll be back next week. If nothing else, then I guess that's it. So later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
I don't know if we got your later, fellas, Jim, but.
Later, fellas.
There we go. Your keyboard stinks.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. Follow us on Twitter. We're at infinloopback. That's at I-N-F-I-N loopback. I'm Brian B. That's at B-R-I-A-N-B. Jim is at Big Jim. That's at B-I-G-J-I-M. Jason is at J-S-N-Y-N-G. That's at J-S-N-Y-N-G. And Brad is at Meester Idle. That's at M-E-E-S-T-E-R-I-D-L-E. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.